Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening. It is Monday, March 29th, 2021, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now talk radio show sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Penelope Bennis, and I am from Bellevue, Washington. I'm here with my co-host, Pamela Lockridge from Louisiana. And as you know, tonight, Monday night is, Pamela's saying hello, is special guest night, and we are very fortunate to have a very special guest with us this evening. And as you all know, you're all very special guests when you're on the show to NASCA. There's no favoritism, but our very special guest, his name is Charles Chuck Prinzen. He's from Fairfield, California. He's a returning NAF family member. If our research serves correctly, this is his fourth time on the show. We're very appreciative to have him back. I don't know. I hear our phone ringing. So, you know, these things happen on the air. We're just going to keep going. Anyway, so I will get to tell you a little bit more about Chuck in a moment, because he did supply us with some information on his bio. But before that, I wanted to invite anybody that might be streaming the show that is interested in calling in and being on the panel. I'd encourage you to do so. Pamela will welcome you in. And we welcome anyone to call in as a panelist, even if it's your first time. The number to call in is area code 646-595-2118. Again, that number is area code 646-595-2118. So before I give you a little bit more information on our very special guest, I'd like to talk to you about NASCA and NASCA's mission statement, because NASCA is all about child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA. It's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with these two goals. The first, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that truly affects everyone. The second, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. One more time, the number to call in is area code 646-595-2118. We already have a panel starting to call in this evening to support our guest. We have Peter from Ontario, Canada. And as you know, NASCA is an international organization, so sometimes we have multiple continents calling in. We have Pamela, myself, and our very special guest. So let me tell you a little bit about Chuck Prinzen from Fairfield, California. He is, as I stated, a returning NASCA family member. He's a child abuse survivor, an activist, and an educator who has worked and continues to work with youth for many, many years. Chuck says that he survived cycles of life and says his story of abuse is no different than many others who have experienced abuse, the same torment, pain, feelings of loneliness. So I'm going to bring on Chuck in a moment, but we have a format for the show for special guest night. We like to break the show into roughly three segments, the first being, even though if you're returning a NASCA family member who's done the show before, these shows tend to, they're archived, and they do get listened to because they can be streamed by many, many, many others over time. So it's really incredible. This is, we've done over 3,000 shows now, and they continue to have listens. And so these shows are very, very important because they give other people, other survivors of child abuse, hope and healing. So we do ask in the first segment, even if you've been on before, to just give a top line of childhood. We like to start chronologically to give the listener some history, some context. So we'll usually go into the first years up into the mid-teens, about 15 or 16. We'll break. We'll go into the middle, the more middle years and the start of in what encompasses the healing process in the second segment. The third segment, we'll talk about the work, obviously, that's being done today by Chuck. So that is how the segments work. And in between each segment, we will break to the panel, and the panel will have an opportunity to ask Chuck a question or make a comment around his story. So without further ado, I'm going to bring you on, Chuck. Chuck, you're live. Good evening. You're with Pamela and Penelope.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Going to you and all our NASCA family.
Thank you. And it's
welcome,
nice to have someone on the coast. We're at 5 p.m., right?
5 p.m. I actually took a walk down about a block and a half away from where we live. It's a park, so I'm sitting in the shade. Nice, beautiful, sunny, early evening. And, you know, got away from the house. I was going to sit in the car, but it was hot. So I said, yeah, I think I'll just take a walk and find myself a nice curb under a tree and ready to do this.
Well, we're so appreciative that you're here again, telling your story, and you are also on our contact list for NASCA, so we know you're available to take calls from other adult survivors of child abuse if needed, and really appreciate your service to NASCA. Are you still in Fairfield, California?
Yes, I am. And we'll get into that in like the third segment, like you're talking about,
okay.
Broke down the segments. I don't want to tell this story, and we'll move into where we're at now. But yeah, Fairfield is, I'm about to, we actually live in an area where there's hills, and when the rain is here, it gets all green with cows and stuff. So it's a lot different from where I was raised, which is Long Beach, California, which I call the concrete jungle. It's more, you know, I'm 15 minutes from Napa in the wineries on the vineyard. So pretty nice up here.
Yes, Field. I'm actually originally from the San Francisco Bay Area, and I went to school at UC Davis, so not too far from Fairfield.
An Aggie. You're an Aggie, huh?
I'm an Aggie. I can tip a cow like the best of them.
Yep. I know all about Davis. Davis is a nice little quiet town, college town with a lot of outdoor places. Where you can sit down, especially a college student, where you can sit down and eat and relax. So.
Yes. It's been a while since I've been there. But So let's, if you wouldn't mind, just from your earliest memory, just give us some context about, you know, what life was like for you. Maybe a little bit about your family, your surroundings, what life was like for you in those really early years.
Well, first of all, let me say to all the listeners, you know, when guests come on, and they want to tell their story. They tell their story, and they tell it because a lot of our family members that hopefully many are listening have either gone through or know somebody that's gone through it. And the only way that you can really get your story, because I'm a storyteller, the only way you can get it out is to be real and raw and tell it the way it is. And then work on, you know, the recovery and as we will move on in this. So get your hankies out and be ready. I would not wish my life on anybody, but I would not change what happened to me in my life because I wouldn't be who I am today. So earliest recollection, two going on three. First of all, my mother and my father separated. I went with my mother, and my sister went with my father. And my mother married. Cal was a hard-working man, had many different trades. He was a merchant marine. He was a carpenter. He was a provider. However, he was a very ugly. He was a monster. He was very abusive to both me and my mother. So the earliest recollection is when my mother was working nights as a waitress. I was just coming out of training pants and diapers. So my stepdad was also an alcoholic. Well, most abusers do have a substance problem. So he asked me as he was getting ready to change me if I had to go to the bathroom, and I said no. Well, he started changing me from the diapers, and I accidentally peed on him. And that triggered his abusive behavior, and he grabbed me. I was actually trying to run away. You know, people ask all the time, how do you remember stuff like this? When you're traumatized, when you develop PTSD because of certain things that have happened in your life, you don't forget them because you have dreams. And so as I was trying to get away, he was grabbing me, any limb, hair, whatever, and he was beating me with the belt and the belt buckle. Screamed as loud as I could, yelling, no, 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 stop, and he just kept beating me. And my grandmother lived upstairs. One of my three grandmothers that helped raise me lived upstairs, and she heard the yelling and the screaming, and she called the police. The police came, and I heard them talking, but for me, I was in my bed. I can't remember if it was a crib or a bed, or I really don't remember that. But I do remember I was under my blankets because that was my comfort zone. I was hiding. I was in my safe zone under my blankets. And the police officer came over and opened up the blankets and saw a severely, severely beaten child. Well, they arrested my stepdad. They put him in jail. He was incarcerated for, I think, about 6 months. Me in a safe home. And in that safe home, because that was Child Protection Services, in that safe home, I was protected. I lived with a family. I had a backyard, had a swing set. And I remember in my storytelling that I talk about when I do speaking events, I talk about the time that I went in the backyard, nice green grass, and got on the swing. I looked up and I said, I know you're up there. Jesus loves me. Yes, I know. I pray that you allow me to get old. This is the true story. And if you let me get old, I promise I will make it right. Well, I'm just turned 65 years old, and we'll get into me making it right later on. So I don't know how they did it. I do know this. I remember my mother running into the house, yelling and screaming. The cops had already handcuffed my stepdad, and my mom tried to take me. Well, when you're in a position that I was in and abused the way that I was abused, you're going to go to protective custody. They would not let me be. First of all, my mom was an alcoholic also, and she was abused very badly. But they would not release me to her because they deemed that she was an unfit mom. So I just remember her yelling and screaming that she wanted them to leave me there, and they took me away. So I don't know what they did. All I remember is that my mother and my stepdad went to counseling, and they proved that they could be, and they returned me to the home. Well, in the beginning, everything was good, you know. Kyle worked, and kind of sort of there was a lull in the violence, both with me and my mom. And then it started happening again. So moving into, and there's nothing that has not been on my body, nothing. Extension cords, peach branches, belt buckles, you name it. And so moving into, let's go to 5 years old. At 5 years old, I was outside playing with my stepsister and brother. And, you know, kids imitate their parents. Kids are sponges of the environment that they live in. And so I was out there with my stepbrother and sister, and we were playing, and I found a cigarette butt on the ground, and I picked it up, and I acted like I was smoking. Look at me. I'm like, Mommy, I'm Daddy. And all of a sudden, I heard those dreaded words, Charles Gary. That means a licking. That means a possible being. So I went into the house. Cal asked me what I was doing. I said, I'm playing with Ricky and Debbie. He says, what are you doing? I said, I'm playing with Ricky and Debbie. You know, kids at 5 years old, their thought process is not very long. They're just playing with my brother and my sister. He says, what are you doing with that cigarette? I said, oh, I was playing. I was playing like Mommy and Daddy. And he said, oh, you want to smoke, huh? My stepdad smoked, what was it, L&M filtered, non-filtered cigarettes. And he sparked it up, put it in my mouth, and told me to inhale it. And so I'm terrified, obviously, and I puff on it, and I blow it out real quick. And he said, no, I said inhale it. And he showed me how to inhale it. So the first time I did it, obviously I got all choked up, started coughing and stuff. I didn't want any more. But if I did not take, and I ended up smoking the whole cigarette, if I did not take a hit, then I got, I forget what weapon he used at the time. It could have been a broom handle. It could have been a belt buckle. I don't know, but all I know was it hurt. So I went ahead and smoked the cigarette, got sick. And so, you know, abuse is not necessarily physical. Abuse is also mental, and it can stay with us for a long time. My stepdad would seriously beat my mother. Seriously, I saw her stabbed with a knife when I was 5. I saw her busted up, broken bones, all that. He was a very ugly man that inflicted a lot of pain. And I would have going into getting a little bit older, there was a lot of mental things. I remember one time that my cousin, I think I was 8, my cousin and I were playing outside on a swing set, you know, the old makeshift rope with the 2x4 or whatever, and we were swinging, and she accidentally fell out of the swing. And she started crying, and she started running to the house as she was yelling for Uncle Calvin. And I'm sitting back, oh, no, don't go there. But she went there. She told him that I pushed her out of the swing. And that particular beating was a military, a Navy, or, you know, there's the regular brooms, and then there's the military broom that's pretty thick. That was broken over me 3 or 4 times while my cousin watched. So it didn't, whenever the trigger hit him, whenever the moment hit him, he abused me. And it basically started at 3 years old. As I had said, I've had many, many different types of objects on my body. I had a friend of mine when I was about where I lived at 8 years old, same place. He lived next door. And I, you know, I dealt with my lickings. Made me, you know, I kind of sort of have a high pain tolerance now, but my next door neighbor, Steve, good friend of mine, I used to think that mine was that, but his stepdad would call him over when he was in trouble and tell him to take his glasses off, and I watched him literally punch him in the face with his fist, and I'm thinking to myself, I could deal with what I got. I don't think I could deal with being punched in the face by my dad. I mean, literally right in the middle of the face. But, and then we moved around a lot. You know, by my sophomore year in high school, I attended 28 schools, 18 elementary, 9 juniors, and then one high school, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Because of the drinking and the fighting and the loud music and whenever we got evicted, which was quite a bit, we moved. Or if my mom got beaten and we seek protective help, we would get a motel room. We would go to a grandparent's house. So it was back and forth, and my mom kept going back until she passed away. But she kept going back to that abuse because she was an alcoholic. And so that's kind of sort of how my childhood was, where the beatings and then the instability of constantly moving, constantly. And, you know, it's not just about the movement. It's the reason why you're moved. That a child is sleeping in his bed at, I don't know, 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. All the drunks are getting drunk playing poker, and then all of a sudden somebody gets mad at somebody else. And next thing you know, there's a full-on brawl going on where, you know, people are fighting to wake up to and walk in the house or walk into the front room and look at that environment. You know, them fighting. So again, abuse is not always just physical. Mental abuse can be just as destructive, sometimes even more destructive, because as you get older, the pain is gone, but the memories are not. So that leads me up into my to about 10 years old.
Wow. I mean,
yeah.
Isn't that the truth though? I do agree that sometimes the emotional mental abuse can be the most penetrating and enduring. Are you okay, Chuck, if we break to the panel? I know we said about, you know, through about 15 years old, but
yeah.
We're almost 30 minutes in, and
Wow,
I mean, you did a great job giving us the first 10 years, and all I can say is
I told you.
And
but this is my purpose, okay? So I'm good. So whatever you want to
do it. Absolutely. You know, I just had one question. I had one question, one comment. But my question was, what really struck me in the beginning was, as well, is that when your parents, your biological parents, divorced, you had a younger sister. Well, you had a sister. The sister went with your father, and you went with your mother.
Yes.
And I'm just curious as to how that decision was made. I would just think the girl would be with her mother, and the boy would be with his father. But so that did strike me.
I couldn't tell you, but there's more to the story of my sister and dysfunctionality as we move forward. So I don't know what the reason was. I do know that my mother took me and my father took my sister, my older sister, a year and a half older than me.
Older sister, okay. And I guess when you were sitting on that swing looking up at God, you know, after being placed with that first family at three years old,
mm-hmm.
my heart into a million pieces. But you already knew that you were going to heal, that you wanted to heal and do good work. And that's amazing. That is amazing. You had it, you know, that's who you are. That was within you even at that age. And that's something else. So,
but there was structure. You know, I went to Sunday school. You know, there was good times. It wasn't always bad, but it was good times. So I went to Sunday school, and I remember that. I remember, and that's where I can sing the song, Jesus Loves Me, Yes, I Know, because the Bible tells me so. And so I did. I asked them to let me get old, and I would make it right. That is as true as I'm sitting here in the park.
Yeah, but knowing that you're in a situation where you have to survive, it's like you said PTSD, but it's like being living in a war zone. You know, you're living in a war zone. And I could relate to that. Well, Pamela,
you never knew
when
the tick was
going to
happen.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. It's living in fear. It's living in constant fear of the next, you know, when are you going to step in the landmine?
Right.
Totally. So I would bring on Pamela. I'm sure Pamela has a few things to say to you.
Yeah. Hey, Chuck.
Hey.
It's horrible to hear about the horrific stuff that a stepdad does, and I'm like with Penelope. I know exactly what you're talking about when you say monster. They're just people you cannot relate to because they're just different, and you're like, where's this coming from? You know, how could I possibly be this bad to warrant this, you know? But did you ever feel, what kind of feelings were you having, like gut feelings, like anger, frustration, confusion? I mean, just name your feelings if you don't mind.
Well, obviously the main feeling was fear. I feared my stepdad because adding to that, I don't know exactly what age it was. We're up to 10 years old, but I don't know exactly what age it is. My stepdad almost killed me twice, once by strangulation and once by drowning. I was in a bathtub, and you know how you sit in the bathtub and you let the water go up, and in the old bathtub they used to have the ring, and if you put too much water in, you could hear the water going into the drain. Well, he heard it, and he came in and didn't. That was one of those ticks, and he submerged me. And years later, I thought it was my mother, but years later, I found out it was one of my aunts that actually came in to save me because he would have drowned me. So I lived in fear. However, I think that most of our guests can relate to. I put myself in a mine. Psychologically, I put those defensive mechanisms around me because the pain I could deal with. You know, after a while, I just dealt with the pain. So that's why I have a really high pain tolerance. But I put myself so deep in the mine. I was so deep in the mine, I was embedded in the walls, like in the mine, dark, cold, no light, and I liked it because I wouldn't let anything in, nothing. So that's kind of sort of how I hid my emotions. I just kept it to myself.
So you denied your emotions. You denied being human, isn't it? You know, pretty much.
I block everything out.
Were you allowed to cry? What happened if you cried?
Oh, that was a good one, too. You know, I'm sure that some of our listeners have heard, oh, you want me to give you something to cry about? I heard that many times, okay? Or while you're getting whacked with the extension cord or whatever, okay, in severe pain, you're going to cry. And it's like, shut up. What are you crying for? What do you mean, what am I crying for, Ella? You just cut me with an extension cord, hello? So you know, I'm bleeding. So
if we don't laugh,
yeah,
we'll cry.
You know, and that's where, in the end, we'll get to that, you know, to who I am today. But the bottom line is I did cry. And I yelled, no, stop. And did the dance, you know. Every kid that's going to get whacked with a belt does the dance. So, yeah, I did cry.
So did you ever, and this may be as we're going forward, so if it's forward, but were you ever angry at God? Did you ever ask in your younger days, the 410. What's going on here, God? Why are you, you love me. Why are you allowing this?
You know, I may have, but I don't remember that. You know, I am a spiritual person. I do believe in the Creator, and I choose to call it God. I don't know. I guess I just blocked it out to where that was. This is my life, and so I can't really say I did. I may have, but I it's not something that is stuck in my mind where. Because I try, even today, I try, and I'm going through a lot of things today with issues, but I try not to question God, because upon conception, we're given a few things. We're given life, we're given a journey, and we're given an hourglass that only the Creator knows how much sand is in the hourglass that He gave us to complete the journey that He has given us. So that's kind of sort of my philosophies now when I try to help other people heal is that it's our journey. And he never said it was going to be a smooth journey. He just says, believe in me and I will love you as you love me. And so I try not to question. As humans, we do.
Thank you for your answers. I'll send it back to Penelope.
Oh, thank you, Chuck. Well, I'm going to bring on Peter from Ontario, Canada. And Peter, good day, Peter. You are on with Chuck.
Good day, Penelope. Good to be on tonight. Good day, Chuck. It's Peter from Ontario. I probably don't have much on questions, so I think Penelope and Pamela beat me to it. But do correct me. Did you say you're older than your sister?
No, I'm a year and a half younger than my sister.
Oh, so you're... Okay. Okay, the other question I must ask, because I think I heard you say something that you're with some friends. How did your buddies react to... You know, the way your father, stepfather would have treated you, you know. Was it out of embarrassment that he would come out and grab you by the neck or?
Well, you know, some of them saw some of the lickings, but what they saw more was some mental stuff. And I'll answer your question, whereas when I got into middle school, high school, I won't get way into it, but I'm going to answer your question. Well, my stepdad he was not ashamed of nothing. I would have friends over. We'd be eating a meal later in the evening, and he would have had sex with my mother and literally came out into where we were at eating dinner or what snacks or whatever. So, you know, that was kind of sort of one embarrassing and something hard to deal with, but my friends just kind of sort of just blew it off because they were aware. And I didn't have a whole lot of friends come around to the house. You know, I end up going to other people. The more I could get away from the house as I got older, the better off I was. So...
I mean, like, I'm just making it quick, but, you know, I too am a survivor from pretty much on child sexual abuse and molestation and physical, mental, emotional abuse from both my parents and a stepmother. Now, I heard Penelope asking that question, but... Were you and your sister pulled to the side by any chance to say, okay, who do you want to live with, or was it done, or was it all done through court?
I don't know about court or whatever. I was actually too young to remember that, but I do know that my sister went with my dad, my father. And I end up going with my mother. How it happened, I have no idea. But
so in other words, it was like mommy's little girl, daddy's little girl, or the opposite.
I mean, probably. I mean, I don't, again, maybe they flipped a coin. I don't know how that, I actually don't know how that turned out, but I end up being with my mother.
Okay. I could say more, but, you know, back to you, Penelope.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Well, we always appreciate you having us.
Oh, thank you.
And I'll put you back on just to listen only mode. And we have Mark from Louisiana on the line. I think he knows
Mark.
Pamela. Anyway, Mark, you're on with Chuck.
Yes, Chuck.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to hear that you went through that as a kid, but I got two questions, actually. My first question is, through all this beatings and stuff, did you ever have thoughts of, like, running away? I mean, just to, I know you said that there was a lot of fear, but did you ever think about running away from that and maybe by doing that, someone would take notice and maybe come rescue you or find out why or what's going on?
Well, I'll answer that question is, around that age, going into 11, 12 years old, I ended up getting a job. I was a shoeshine boy in Long Beach, California. The Navy sailors were down there, and I made a lot of money shining shoes in 1969. I had like 13 bars. So I stayed away. You know, at that time, my stepdad actually became a merchant marine, and he went away for a while, then he came back. You know, he'd been gone 6 months or whatever. But, yeah, I did have thoughts of running away, but I didn't really have to worry about running away because as many times as my mother left my stepdad, and we went into a hotel, got on welfare, off welfare, on welfare, off welfare, to this grandma's house, to that grandma's house, you know, there was many times I got away. But what I did happen is there were people that were aware of me that kind of sort of mentored me at a young age where I would go visit them, and they had made mention of how they would like to adopt me or take me away. Or I remember one particular couple in Dana Point, California. We were camping, and I got a licking there. I got a pretty good licking in Dana Point, and they had made a mention how they would like to steal me and get me away from that. So yes, I did have. I mean, and eventually I did run away, and that's when I turned 13. So we'll get to that in the next segment. But yes, I eventually did run away at 13 years. Excuse me, at 16 years old. After 13 years of the abuse,
right.
I did run away.
Well, and then still in those younger years, I know you said he got arrested one time and spent 6 months in jail, but mm-hmm. with all the beatings and that, did the cops visit your house a lot?
More so for domestic violence than child abuse.
Okay.
From the fighting, the drinking,
right.
You know. So yeah. Or coming and with the sheriff coming and serving the eviction notice and having us get it out, you know. So
right.
And I was literally carrying or struggling carrying refrigerators because when we had to move. At 9 years old, they didn't come around. The only time I remember them coming around for my particular situation, and I had a record in Long Beach Courthouse or Long Beach Police Department. I had it actually it's sealed now, but there are records of me for photographs of how severely I was beaten on that particular day.
Okay, I have one more question. When you mentioned that back when you were talking about the cigarette incident, and you said, "Well, I'm just playing with my brother and sister," these your stepbrother and sister?
Yes, they were his. They were. See, I had my mother and my father had me and my older sister, and then they separated or divorced. My father married another woman and had a daughter and a son. So they're my half sister and brother, and then Cal had a daughter and a son. So I had half sisters and brothers,
right.
And stepsisters and brother, and then one real biological with mother and father, sister.
Okay. Well, those the brother and sister that were his, did they live with you?
On and off.
Oh, okay.
Because
I was wondering, if they were his kids, did he abuse them too?
Not like me.
So, I was wondering if that's because you weren't his that he felt at liberty to just have his way, you know, being
well,
a monster.
Nobody stayed at any time in my childhood because they would end up going back to their mother. Okay, and my sister came around and stayed with us here and there, and then I had my, you know, my half sister and brother lived with somebody else. They lived with their mother, so there was never really, for any length of time, a happy family gathering.
Right.
A structure.
Right. Well, I'm just sorry to hear that. I mean, we had a show recently at, you know, where parents were beating kids for punishment to learn them something. And I just, you know, beating a kid isn't right, no matter what. And I'm just sorry to hear that. But I know that you're strong now and you're going to get to that. So that's all I had to ask about.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you so much, Mark. And, well, Chuck, okay, so believe it or not, you know, 90 minutes is a long time, but you've done the show three times before. I'm Wolf Fly. We're at 48 minutes left, believe it or not.
Yep.
So, you know.
I can go into warp speed.
I will. Yeah, I'll sort of know. This is wonderful. I mean, wonderful that you are. So descriptive, you're having, you know, some really good questions, and there's a lot of good dialogue going on. You're giving us some more information. You know, we started to kind of edge into, you know, 12, 13 through 16. But I will just turn it back over to you and let you continue.
So at 12 years old, I had my job. I was actually a shoeshine boy. I made a lot of money. My mom took that money from me, and she went out. My mom was a very promiscuous woman. Her nickname was Bunny, and she would bring men home. Matter of fact, I think I was 12 when she brought this one guy home. He was getting a little more friskier than she wanted him to, and I went in there with, I have always, to this day, had some type of blade under my bed. So I got my blade, I got the butcher knife, I got a hammer, I went in, I hit the guy upside his leg with the hammer and told him to get the off of my mother. And I stood my ground, and he ended up leaving. And as soon as he left, one of my grandmothers lived back in the back house, and I went, I ran over there crying because I was strong for a minute, but as soon as he left the house, I broke down. So I dealt with again, a lot of emotional abuse also with my mother, bringing men home, drinking, okay? So moving forward, I had attended 18 elementary schools, as I said, and now I'm in junior high school. So junior high school, I had three grandmothers, my mother's mother, my father's mother, and my stepdad's mother that would take care of me here and there. So I was in the seventh grade. They took me to my grandma Nellie's house, which happened to be from Louisiana. We lived on a ham hock and navy beans and cornbread for quite a while. You know, we were not rich in any way, shape, or form. But they dropped me off on a Friday night and thinking, okay, you know, because they would go off on benches. They would be gone sometimes for 2, 3, 4, 5 days while they went off on an alcoholic binge. So they dropped me off at my grandma's house, and the best thing about that is I wasn't being beat. Now, grandma would lick me if I was bad with the wooden spoon, but not like the beatings I got. And they dropped me off, and a couple days went by, a couple weeks went by, a couple months went by. They went to Hawaii for 2 weeks, or 2 years. That's when the construction in Waikiki and Honolulu was really strong in the early 70s. And they left me. They abandoned me for 2 years with my grandmother. And never said a word to me. So, I mean, so So, you know, the scars or the gristle or the mental fortitude, like I told you, I was in a mine. I placed myself in the depths of the mine and tried my hardest not to let anything affect me. So moving forward, 16 years old, I was a sophomore in high school. I lettered in 5 sports. Sports kept me in school. Had to have good grades to have sports. I lettered in football, track, water polo, wrestling, and swimming, and I was even in the band. It kept me away from that house. Sometimes late swim sessions or football or whatever kept me away from that house. Well, one particular time, they were gone on a bench, and I was restricted to the house. I had one of my friends over, which that particular friend saw a lot. So to answer a question earlier, that particular friend saw a lot of things that happened in my life. They came home. We were playing stickball with the rolled-up sock in the front yard, and Cal asked me what I was doing. I said, I'm playing. He said, I thought I put you on restriction. Well, first of all, what right do you have putting me on restriction? You're not even here. You know what I mean? I'm just throwing that in there because you're gone for days. So, and I'm fending for myself. So we're playing stickball, and he said, get in the house. Well, I knew, okay? I'm now in high school. I'm yoked up a little bit, okay? I'm not some scrawny little kid anymore. And I was actually taking martial arts. And he approached me in the kitchen, and he started throwing punches at me this time. And I blocked the punches, and I ran out the door with only the clothes on my back, and I ran to a mentor that had been mentoring me, an older girl. She was a senior in high school, became my sister because her mom, widowed Japanese lady, heard the stories about me. And when I ran away, I had nowhere else to go. I ran to my mentor, which ended up becoming my foster sister. So I had a widowed Japanese mom with 2 daughters take in a very damaged, both psychological and physical, 16-year-old punk kid, very damaged. And she put me through high school. So I graduated with a scholarship from the LA Times. My senior year, I was across the street at Roosevelt Elementary School the first 3 periods because I took care of all my stuff my first 2 years. So I was across the street at a kindergarten. So me thinking about you, thinking about other ones, have been with me for a long time. I'm keeping that promise that I made to God. So I was across the street 3 periods a day and in a kindergarten class as a teacher's aide. And they gave me all the ones that they didn't think were going to make it onto the first grade. They were going to hold them back. And some of them made it forward because for me at that particular time, if I could give, knowing where I came from in my childhood, if I could give those kids love and energy, positive energy, and again, some of them made it to the first grade, that's what it was all about for me. Well, I graduated. And at my graduation, my mom had asked me, my foster mom asked me if I invited my parents. I said, no. She said, why? I said, because they always embarrass me, especially Cal. And she told me, Japanese culture, she said, I want you to invite them. I said, Mom, I don't want to invite them. I mean, they embarrass me. He's embarrassed me my entire life. So I'm pleading. And she says, no, I want you to invite them. So I invited them. Well, the first thing happened is I went to invite them. Cal gave me – I had been drinking alcohol since I was 8 years old. I was sniffing glue at 11. I was doing LSD at 12. I was self-medicating myself. I think some of the listeners can relate to that. So he gave me a bottle of Kessler's. We drank it. I went to the Long Beach Arena. And so there was a graduating class of 800. Which means there was thousands in the arena. And we marched in. I'm sitting next to my marching partner. The jazz band starts playing, and all of a sudden you hear, get it on, man, get it on, was Cal. Yelling at the jazz band, getting up dancing. And he was drunk, as always, and kind of sort of embarrassed me. So a little bit later on, the principal was calling up students that were getting scholarships and stuff, and all of a sudden my marching partner hit me, and she said, he just called your name. He didn't call my name. 18 elementaries, 9 juniors, he did not call my name. He called it again, and this time I knew he did because Cal jumped up and said, excuse me, I'm just saying the way it is, Cal jumps up and yells as loud as he can, says, that's my goddamn son. Embarrassed. Again, a mental thing. But I didn't live with him anymore, so it kind of sort of blew him off. And so I graduated from high school. I ended up working on the docks in Southern California. I'm a retired Teamster, 29 years on the docks. My mother passed away on Mother's Day, 1979, at 44 years old. Her body finally gave out from all the abuse and the alcohol of 23 years of being with that man. At the funeral, as always, the alcoholics came. They cussed. They yelled. They screamed. They were drunk. They were picking her head up, putting stuff around it. They had their red lipstick on. They were kissing her on her forehead. She had lip marks all over her head. And I'm just standing over because I finally get to put my mom. Because a year earlier, I mentally got my mom out of my mother was no longer existing in my mind. And, you know, I told you I was in the depths of the mind. So I put my mom in the depths of the mind with me because she didn't exist. My mother would not do that. How could my mother do the things that she did? So she tried to get me drunk, kept offering me alcohol. I said no. I walked away. A year had gone by that I did not see my mother because she actually lived about 5 blocks from where my foster home was because I refused to go around anymore. I finally just cut the line. But I was able to stand over my mother, listen to these alcoholics, what they're doing, and at the cemetery, Cal wanted to open the casket. And I looked at him, and now I'm 21 years old. I'm looking a lot thicker now. And I actually put my hands on him when I was 18. I kind of sort of took him out. I didn't take him out, but I finally had an opportunity because he had asked me to show him how good I was. And I said, I can't do it. I'm in street fighting. Everything is reflex. Long story short, he caught me one time off guard when I was coming out of the house talking to my mom. And he threw punches at me, and I did a matrix on him where I blocked him, and I actually did a good open hand strike right to his solar plex, and he looked like one of those guys flying backwards in midair and hit himself on the ground, and his dentures fell out, and he was choking because I'd knocked the air out of him. Later, he had cut my mother with a sword that he got from the Philippines, required 90 stitches to cut to put her leg back together. I went over there. I'd had enough. I went over there and when I went into the house, I saw the sword, a hatchet, a hammer, and something else that he had on the coffee table because he knew I was coming. And I was actually going to, at that time, I was actually going to not kill him, but I was going to take care of him. I walked in. I looked at what he had over there, and I just kind of sort of laughed. I turned around and I went back home. So that's my middle years. All the way up until after I graduated and moved forward.
Well, you sound like you found a safe place in a couple different venues. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, you obviously thrived at school, and I have mm-hmm. teenage boys in high school right now that are doing sports, so I can really appreciate playing 5 sports and what you lettered in.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, which is the greatest thing, too, to play sports. You do have to keep your grades up. It's a nice way to kind of keep everything in check. And the fact that you were well-rounded in the band, I'm thinking, wow, you know, you really had this surviving spirit because you had no, you know, before you went to your mentor's house and they took you in. Thankfully, that was the second, you know, venue where you had these guardian angels that took you in. But you just were this really well-rounded kid that had something within him, you know, that to me it just sounds like that had this surviving spirit you know, not only were you in sports, you were just so well-rounded, and you obviously, you know, earned that scholarship, too. So
hey, it was only $250 from the LA Times, but just saying, I got a scholarship from the LA Times, right? You don't have to put a price tag
absolutely.
On it.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because I think, you know, you definitely, I mean, you just have, you know, you just made the choice to, you just made the choice that you're going to succeed. You're going to succeed.
I had a lot of support.
Counselors,
coaches. I had a lot of support. Counselors, coaches, my foster mom, my foster sister, the Japanese family that took me in and accepted me. Okay. Again, a 16-year-old punk. You know, but what I did miss is at 17 years old, I became a father. I was 16. I was 17, and Mapawana was 15 when Shauna was born, June 3rd, 1973. And that relationship did not last. So dysfunctionality is in my family. Okay, so we'll get into that in the end. I'll round that off in the end of what I do now and why I do what I do. But a roller coaster ride. But if I didn't have the support that I had, if I didn't have my sister, that at that time I would just go over and talk to her and get away from, well, even more so while they were on a binge, and I just told her. And she told her mom. And you know, that woman, I will say this. I almost killed Cal. I had had enough at one moment in my life where I had found out that he, through the family, that I had found out that Cal had made a statement that the only reason why a 40-something-year-old, my mom was young when she adopted me. She lost her husband at a young age. She never remarried. And she took good care of me. She would not take the money from the child services. She bought me clothes. Okay, she took care of me. She made my breakfast every morning. She made my lunch. She made my dinner. She took care of me. And I heard through the grapevine that Cal put the energy out to the family that the only reason why that 40-something-year-old woman took a 16-year-old punk kid into her house is because she wanted me to stud her. I went off. I guess that I was in martial arts. I ended up destroying my dresser, tearing my bed apart, and my mom came in and she, while I'm destroying the room, and she's trying to calm me, she says, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm going to go kill him, Mom. I'm done. I'm going to kill him. I'm taking him out." And she said, "Why?" I said, "Because I had enough. I had enough. He attacked you." Okay? The precious woman that you are that have given me love and set me in the right direction, for him to say what he says, "I'm taking him out," he does not deserve to live. And she called me and she said, "You know what? If you do that, son, you're going to win." I was like, "What do you mean you're going to win? You're going to be dead, Mom." And still very agitated. All of these years have now come to a head where I was going to take him out. And she called me and she said, "You're going to win because you're going to go to jail. And he's going to win." And so I didn't.
And there's a little bit of guardian angel in there, too. Right?
Yes. Yes.
Mental, physical,
I mean, just to the highest level.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, nobody's going to blame you for having that, you know, having that kind of visceral reaction at all. Very understandably. I'm going to bring Pamela on, and we're at 30 minutes, so I'm going to ask the panel to keep it very, very short because we want to hear the rest. So, Pamela, you're on.
Hi, Chuck.
Hey.
I just want to make a comment that these monsters know how to touch us or trigger us in the most depths of our depths of our soul, don't they? I mean, for him, you were gone, you were doing good, you weren't even in his life anymore, yet he's thinking that to somebody to get back to you. Talk about the depths of evil. Oh, my God.
He was a very sadistic individual. He was a monster.
Did you ever know if he was abused at some point? That's not an excuse, but
you know what? I can answer that question now, but it's kind of I'm going to answer that when we move forward into who I am,
okay,
and what I do and why I do what,
okay,
I do today. So I'll answer that,
all right,
question, because it's important that people understand this.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Pamela. So I'm going to bring Peter from Ontario back on. Peter, you are back on with Chuck. And again, I'm just going to ask everybody to keep it very short, if that's possible.
Yeah, hey, Chuck. I'm not going to say a great deal because I don't want to think of everybody else. This is your radio talk, but did you actually have a relationship with your siblings apart from your new family that you're with?
No. We were very far and in between did we actually spend any real time together. The only one that I really spent any time with, if I spent time with any of them, would be with my stepbrother and my stepsister.
I don't know what to say. I'm pretty much on the upper, on that same side as you are, except I didn't have no relationship with any of my parents or my stepmother or sister. The only relationship I probably would have had was my grandparents, but I'm speechless. All I can say is that I'm with you all the way on this as well. So I'm done. I don't want to hold up the radio talk.
I'm grateful.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Thank you. And I'm going to bring Mark back on. Mark, you're back on with Chuck.
Oh, yes, Chuck. I just have a brief comment. I'm glad that you were stopped from going to try and kill that guy, because it looks like an angel is with you, because you have now important work to do. And I know you probably didn't know it then, but it's a good thing, because now you're at where you're at now, and you're doing important work. So I just wanted to make a comment that I'm glad that you didn't do what you plan on doing. Yet I understand the rage that could happen at that moment, but I'm just glad that you're doing what you're doing now.
That's part of my journey, and I'm grateful.
Amen.
Thank you, Mark. Okay, so Chuck, the rest of the time is yours. I know we all want to hear about the rest of your story and obviously what you're doing today. So you have 26 minutes. I'm giving them all to you because we're waiting with bated breath. I am.
Okay. So I'm gonna start with this. Oof. When we have to go back into, and it happens every time I come on this show. When we, and even sometimes when I talk, because I'm a motivational speaker and I'm a life coach, when we talk, we have to go back into that realm of which we lived in order for us to tell our story in an effectful way. So I'm actually starting to water up a little bit, because what I've learned in my life, I'm actually the founder and CEO of a consulting firm, and it's only me doing the consulting. It's not a big thing. Out of Fairfield, California, I finally got me a business license so I can get me some write-offs. But it's called Me Inc. Now, MEINCNOW, and it came to me about 9 years ago in a garage where when I was in high school, and when I graduated, I used that scholarship to go to Long Beach City College to take up early childhood education. But a lot of my early childhood education was based on more experience stuff, of my experience. And I wanted to open a Prinzens preschool. It was a thought. It was a dream. Prinzens preschool.
Princess Preschool would allow youth from all walks of life, white, green, yellow, blue, purple, whatever their color is, because we only have one blood, one love. They would be deaf students. They would be blind students. They would be handicapped students. They would be mentally challenged students. And they would all get together certain times during the course of the day and play together. Because kids are sponges of the environment that they live in. It's called traits. I know this because I became abusive at 26 years old, and I was throwing my stepdaughter across the room into a wall. Am I proud of it? No, it's part of my journey. Don't judge me for who I am. Accept me for who I have become in the journey that God has allowed me to walk on with the experience that I had. I went and seek help. That psychiatrist listened to what I had to say, and he says, I'm going to tell you right now, your stepdad's coming out of you. You got traits. I said, whoa, wait a minute. First of all, what's a trait? So he explained to me what a trait was. I choose to call them cycles. Passed down from generation to generation to generation to generation. And he says, you're abusing your stepdaughter because cow's coming at you. And I said, whoa, time out. Cut the line. Never put my hand on any child again, and I'm 65 years old. So what I'm about to say is I forgave my stepdad. I forgave my stepdad because I had come to the understanding and the realization that he was just a sponge of the environment that he grew up in, and he got a trait. Or he got a cycle. Now, it's not easy to do. I'm a very positive person. So now, me now came to me in a garage that stands for me expressing I need change now. And I work with the youth of today to help them become aware of traits and cycles, suicide, alcoholism, domestic violence, child abuse, sexual abuse, abandonment, everything that I've gone through in my life. I have all this white hair on the top of my head, and I have a goatee with a mustache that's kind of sort of all white now. That's all wisdom from the journey that I've been on. And I choose positive because you're never going to forget what happened to you, ever. One of my workshops is changing the channel. I still have nightmares of Cal beating me, and I can't touch him in my dreams. But you know what? I wake up and I change the channel. I don't like what I'm watching in my dream, and I physically allow myself to wake up, open my eyes up for like 30 seconds or a minute, and I fall back to sleep because the dream, the channel will not come back on unless it comes back another evening. So the nightmares continue at 65 years old, but I've learned how to control them. So me now is about helping the youth become aware of those cycles at a younger age than I did, so we can start working on them. And I now work in high schools, middle schools. I actually speak. I most recently was a top 25 finalist in the Next Impactor 2019, where it was a global competition where people that had a purpose in their life, whatever it might be, Chemo Buddies for Cancer, or child abuse, or drug abuse, or whatever. They had a purpose in there, and they're going to send their message. So anybody would like to look that up. I was a top 25 finalist. That woman that I got pregnant 14, and she was a mother at 15. The Creator has listened to me, and the promise that I've made. So every day I continue to do what I do in positivity and love to help those become aware that they are victims of the environment that they lived in. However, change is possible. And I know this. I believe in it. It's in my soul. 33 years after separating with that young lady, the Creator gave her back to me. She lost her husband. He died early.
I went through a divorce of 23 years, and it was meant for her and I to get back together because it's part of my journey. We now have 17 grandchildren, 5 great-grandchildren, and 7 children between us. And we grumble a lot. We've been together 16 years now. We grumble a lot, but we agree to disagree. So the next impactor, I'm also involved in some other organizations that we go around the country and we speak to at-risk kids. Why are they at risk? Because they're probably going through the exact same thing that I went through. Again, I wish my life on nobody. But I wouldn't change what happened to me because I would not be the advocate that I am today with the passion and the purpose and the flame to help others make that change, because it is possible. There are many listeners right now that are probably listening and saying, I can't do that. No, you can't. Okay? And it started with me. I self-taught myself. I went to the psychiatrist one time, but after telling me that, I took it to myself. One of my workshops is going in front of the mirror, listening to Michael Jackson, the man in the mirror, and going in front of the mirror and talk to that person in the mirror. That person is not going to talk back. I guarantee you that person will not talk back. But sooner or later, if you keep talking to that person in that mirror, that person will have small talk with you. And eventually, that person in the mirror will have a full-blown conversation if you let your guard down, because my job right now, my program, is going back into the depths of the mind from which I came from and pulling out those rocks that are valuable, that have diamonds in them. Every single life has a value. Every rock has a value. There's more back where I came from. And it's my job, as God allows me to continue this journey I'm on, to go back into the depth of the mind and pull them out. That's why I'm an advocate for NASCA. That's why I am the California State Ambassador. I'm still there. That's why I do get calls from all over the country. And I talk to them. And I talk to them about how you can get involved with NASCA, how you get on the website. Okay? We're not miracle workers. However, we're very strong supporters. So I'm an advocate for change, because change is possible. You know, you get that warm, fuzzy feeling that puts a smile on your face, makes you feel good. You want more of it, and the only way you're going to get more of it is to continue to chip away and grind that outer layer, one day at a time, one story at a time, one shared loving moment at a time, chip away at that outside rock that you put around yourself, because there's a valuable person inside that rock. And I choose to chip, grind, and polish to get into the depths of that rock and pull the valuable diamond out, which is a human being, and help them become as shiny can be, so they can feel the warmth and the love. You know, people used to tell me, and I talked about the mind. I said, when I finally was able to feel the warmth of the sunshine, when I finally was able to come out, I liked it. Actually, it did feel pretty good. And I will continue to do what I'm doing, because I get to wake up every single day. And by the way, my sister, I had not seen my sister in 38 years. This happened 3 weeks ago. I had not heard from my sister in 8 years. I had not seen my sister since November 9th, 1983. I found out she passed. This is just over the last couple of weeks. I found out she passed. Then I found out she didn't pass. She was in Phoenix, Arizona in a rehab. She's a stage 4 cancer, ovarian and cervical cancer. And I called her, and we talked. And I went to Phoenix and picked her up and took her to Kingman, Arizona, where I stayed with her for a week with her oxygen and everything else. And I remember telling her, this is Chucky. This is Chuck. She said, who? I said, Chucky. I don't let too many people call me Chucky, because Chucky is my protector. Chucky is that nut that will hurt you. I've learned how to keep him calm. I said, Chucky. She said, oh, my brother. I said, oh, my beautiful sister. Crying and told me she was sorry she hadn't gotten a hold of me in 8 years, but she was embarrassed of the environment that she lived in, and that's why she didn't call me back. I was supposed to go see her. And I said, sis, that's okay. We're talking now. Well, I just found out that my sister moved to Oklahoma. I was part of this process, moved to Oklahoma, so she's not in assisted living. She's with her daughter that did not want nothing to do with her. That's generation. My father died at 86 years old and never saw his father. I wasn't in my daughter's life. My father wasn't in my life. Bits and pieces. Generational cycles of negativity that are passed down if you allow them to continue. And my sister is now in Oklahoma City. She's not doing very well right now, but you know what? She's with her daughter. She's with family. And she's going to pass in peace. So that's kind of sort of where I'm at. What I'm doing today, I'm advocate for positivity.
I am almost speechless. It's rare. But Chuck, what I wanted to, you know, there's so many, obviously, I have a smile on my face and tears in my eyes at the same time. And I'm sure our panel and a lot of our listeners do as well. But you, at the beginning of the third segment, said something very poignant, well, amongst everything that you said that was very poignant, but that every time you tell your story, talk about your childhood and where you came from, you are giving a gift. It is giving for yourself. If you're making a sacrifice, it is because there's pain. There's pain to go back there, and there's generosity within that. You bring every time you speak, and that generosity is really shining brightly, and it's very apparent. But first, I wish to thank you for that. And I can only imagine, those high school students and your clients and everybody that has an opportunity to hear your story and interact with you or those that you work with, I am sure that the way they respond to you and the help and the work that you're doing is just the impact that you're making is enormous. They're very, very, very fortunate to have you. If you were speaking at my son's high school, I can tell you that I would be very grateful for that. So I wanted to
set it up. I'll come and do it. That's what I do.
Yeah, well,
look at my website. Look at my website. I don't want to put my business out there, but www.miincnow.com, meinknow.com. I have a website, and it talks about some of the stuff. It talks about my childhood and things that I've done. And I go into high schools and I go to middle schools and I speak. And I'm known as Coach Chuck. I come out in a suit and tie. They don't want to listen to me. All of a sudden, I'll put on Dear Younger Me. I don't know if anybody's heard that, but it's a beautiful song by Mercy Me. Dear Younger Me, if I only knew what I know now. I put that on and I go and I change into a coaching outfit because I've been coaching sports for about 43 years now, from youth to middle school to high school. I actually have young men that are playing in the pros. So I've been blessed to watch them grow from the mentoring or the teachings, the stories that I talk to. And that's how I get rewarded. So, yeah, I do talk. Anybody has anybody out there that knows some schools or that, you can talk to me. And you know what? I haven't made a dime in what I'm doing. I've not made one penny in what I'm doing because I'm keeping the promise that I've made at 3 years old. If he would just let me get old, I'd make it right. So it's not about money. Never has been.
Oh, my. I love that. And no, it's not. We encourage comes on the show to talk about, you know, what they're doing, to talk about their websites and their business, talk about their books, their publishing books. So for those of you listening, you can go once this show is finished recording. You can go into the archives for tonight's show. The scan number is 2626-2626. And in the bio, so when you scan on that link, press the link in the bio, you can actually see a hyperlink to me. It's MEINC. Yeah. And that is the website where you can connect with Chuck. You can also connect with Charles Princeton on LinkedIn. I just sent you a request. But absolutely,
place to talk about what you are doing out in the community and how people can get a hold of you. So, by the way, I just, as an aside, and I'll about 9 minutes left, so I'm going to open up the mic to Pamela. But,
let me say this real quick. What I've learned in my life is that the poisons that we keep, because I talk about the mind and the depths and the darkness and how I liked it. It was cold and I didn't want to come out. What I've learned is what I teach. The more we hold those poisons, those toxic poisons inside of us, the longer we're going to be in a negative love and a negative feeling. That's what the program is all about, helping you become more positive, chipping away, grinding away, because we have to be able to release the poison from within and understand this. We were just victims of the environment we lived in. However, maybe that generational cycle was passed down to that abuser. That's how I've learned how to forgive. Never forget, but I've learned how to forget and move forward.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it takes a lot of strength and a lot of courage, which obviously you demonstrate every single day, and a will to do so. I think is the difference, a will to do so. By the way, before I bring on Pamela, I just wanted to say that just to hear about your family today, what a way to come full circle. What a wonderful ending for
journey.
In terms of your relational bond to have come full circles,
right.
Really wonderful to hear. Really wonderful to hear. So Pamela,
it's
we
awesome.
Do have 7 minutes left, and I'm sure Pamela
okay.
has a couple of questions or comments for you.
Okay.
Yeah, Chuck, did you ever go to therapy? Was therapy ever a part of your journey?
Once, when I put my hands on my stepdaughter.
Okay. Is Cal still alive?
Cal's fate was his dad. This is these cycles. His dad was found in a field in Wilmington, California, with a lot of empty Gallo wine bottles, and he had a tent. He was found dead on that field. My stepdad was found in a trailer park in Compton, California, long hair, long nails, all messed up, as he got what he deserved in the long haul. He passed away in a trailer park, had nothing. So, no, he's no longer with us.
Well, I'm like Penelope. You have come a long way, and you come full circle, and you have actually, you know, decided not to be the evil that was perpetrated against you, and I talk about that in my book. I decided, you know, when evil was perpetrated against me, I did not want to be like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And so I'm like you, as many people as I can reach with my story to tell them that there's hope. Than I do. So it sounds like
mm-hmm.
you're doing the same thing. Thank you for being the ambassador for California, by the way. For
yeah, well, keep the phone calls coming, and I will keep supporting them. I've had them from all over the country, actually, and I enjoy it. So I just refer them to the website because we can't perform miracles. However, we can lead them to plenty support systems.
Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And Chuck, as you're aware, one of the wonderful things that NASCA has added, in addition to the Stop Child Abuse Now talk radio shows, is 3 days a week, there are now Zoom group recovery meetings for anyone that wishes to participate. They're at 11 a.m. our time, Pacific Standard Time, or 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But I do... I think that that's a great additional way to have out not well to have support for anyone and in any stage of their journey to come and find support and commonality. I mean, survivors understand survivors. We are
stories may be a little bit different, but a lot of times the feelings are very, very similar. Mm-hmm. As our founder, CEO Bill Murray states. And I know my question for you is how did you find NASCA? And I know that your first show was, I believe, in 2015. But how did you find NASCA?
1086 to be exact. I know the number, 1086. I don't know. You know, I am involved in a lot of organizations. MATFA, Mentoring and Touch from Above, where we actually go into prisons and speak to prisoners about making change for their generation and kids. So I actually have experienced it. I really don't know how. Well, let's just say that God connected me with my brother Bill Murray, and I love him. He knows that anytime he's ever needed something, and he's asked, I'm there. So I don't know how, but I'm grateful to be part of this because I can't heal anybody, but I can tell stories of how you can make a change. It is possible.
Yep. Well, you're absolutely a testament to that. You're a testament to that. And that's what gives, as you know, so many other survivors hope because you're a testament to it. And, you know, the gift, the courage to come on and tell your story, you know, from 1086 on to the present of 2626. It's in there.
Yay.
Truly. But isn't that funny how we always remember the number of our first show, right? 1086, I can say 2663. I can't remember the number of my second show, right? But it's that first one, the first time coming on.
Yeah, I've had a couple.
Yeah, Pamela and Mark have gone on together for the fourth time. I think there was one in 2016 as well. One in 2015 is your first one, 2016, 2018. Mm-hmm. And then the present day. So I just really thank you for that. And it's amazing to go back and see in the archives. They are, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, they are listened to over and over and over. And so every time you've done a show for NASCA, it's just been a gift, truly a gift that keeps on giving to the community. I wish to thank you for that.
To heal a heart, you have to give your heart. And that's what I do.
It's absolutely true. Absolutely. And you have about a minute left, so I was going to leave it to you. And if you'd like to say, you know, a few last words to leave your audience with, and the they're yours.
Well, even more so in these times that we're in, these difficult times we're in, this pandemic and all the ugly that's in, you know, there's still a beauty. And I choose where the cycle is. If I can stop the cycle of negativity for just a nanosecond and put warmth in somebody's heart, that second of stopping that cycle gives that moment of love and positivity. So change is possible, okay? I know this for a fact. I was actually 50 years old going through some stuff and almost committed suicide. So I can, excuse me, I can relate to all that. But, you know, I say what the world needs now is love, sweet love. The only thing that there's just too little of. So go out there, brothers and sisters, and love on somebody else. Love on yourself because change is possible. And it's really simple. Positive stuff brings positive stuff, brings the love. Negative stuff keeps the toxicity and the ugly poison within you that's only going to cause you pain.
Absolutely. Well, you reap what you sow, and your cup does runneth over. So I just wish to thank you on behalf of NASCA, Chuck Prinzen from Fairfield, California. We wish to thank you for being our special guest this evening and our NASCA family member and on the contact list. So thank you so much. For the rest of
you, thank
you.
As we
there,
say,
who are listening.
Hui ho, kako, until we meet again. Aloha.
Thank you for that. Love it. With that, we're signing off on behalf of NASCA.
Pamela Lockridge and Penelope Bennis. Thank you. God bless the children and good night.
Love you all.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, Chuck. Wow.
Thanks.
What
Thank
an
you.
Honor it's been. What an honor it's been.
Check out that website. Check out the website.
Absolutely. I actually already did, but I will. It's up on my screen now. We'll be in touch.
And you said that you friended. You said that you friended me on LinkedIn.
I did.
Okay.
I'm gonna click
and accept, and you can go on my LinkedIn and find a little bit more about me. But yeah, I am willing to travel and talk to as many people as I can because they are tomorrow's future.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. So we'll be connected.
Okay.
Perfect.
Have a blessed evening.
Thanks. You too. Thank you, Chuck. Good night.
Bye.